Consequently, although his duration of life gradually came to an end, his long life, consisting of a Mandantara Irak, was not spent in vain, since he ever engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down, and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. As freshly prepared food is very tasteful, but if kept for 3 or 4 hours becomes stale and tasteless, so the existence of material enjoyment can endure as long as life is fresh, but at the fag end of life, everything becomes tasteless, and everything appears to be vain and painful. The life of Emperor Swayambhuvamana, however, was not tasteless. As he grew older, his life remained as fresh as in the beginning because of his continued Krishna consciousness. The life of a man in Krishna consciousness is always fresh. It is said that the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening, and its business is to reduce the duration of everyone's life. But the sunrise and sunset cannot diminish the life of one who engages in Krishna consciousness. Swayambhuvamanu's life did not become stale after some time, for he engaged himself always in chanting about and meditating upon Lord Vishnu. He was the greatest yogi because he never wasted his time. It is especially mentioned here, Vishnu Kauravato Bhuvata Kataha. When he talked only of Krishna and Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. When he heard something, it was about Krishna. When he meditated, it was upon Krishna and his activities. It is stated that his life was very long, 71 yugas. One yuga is completed in 4,320,000 years. 71 of such yugas is the duration of the life of a manu, and 14 such manus come and go in one day of Brahma. For the entire duration of his life, 4,320,000 times 71 years, Manu engaged in Krishna consciousness by chanting, hearing, talking about, and meditating upon Krishna. Therefore, his life was not wasted, nor did it become stale. Ayata yamas tasyasan yama swantara yapanaha shunvato dhyayato vishno kurvato bruvata kataha. Consequently, although his duration of life gradually came to an end, his long life, consisting of a manvantara era, was not spent in vain, since he ever engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down, and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. This translation of the verse begins with the word consequently. So let's read the previous verse to find out, or to remind ourselves, what this consequently is in relationship to. Thus Swayambhuvamanu was a saintly king. Thus also leads us backwards into the previous verse. It's a description of Swayambhuvamanu's lifestyle. Swayambhuvamanu was a saintly king. Although absorbed in material happiness, he was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. A description of the life of Swayambhuvamanu. Bhagavatam is a description of the lives of the great devotees which are in relationship to Krishna. Bhagavatam is a book of Krishna. Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always with his devotees. And some of the great devotees' lives have been described in short form in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The essence of all their lives, what is the essence of the life of every devotee? Is that they're Krishna conscious. That's what makes someone a devotee. What's the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee? It's not the dress or not even necessarily the mantras they chant. Even sometimes non-devotees chant Hare Krishna. It may also be. But devotee means that he is Krishna conscious. Favorably. Not only Krishna conscious, but he should be favorably Krishna conscious. In the Bhagavatam, we also have the description of demons. They are also Krishna conscious, but not in the way that is recommended. Krishna conscious means anukulyena Krishna anushilana bhakti ruttama, giving up on that anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kamadhyana ruttam, giving up all personal desires to engage in the service of Krishna favorably. So we find also some demons like Kamsa was intensely Krishna conscious, but not favorably. He was always fearing Krishna. Hiranyakashipu was also Krishna conscious, as he hated Krishna. So he was Krishna conscious, but this is not being recommended in the Bhagavatam. It's recommended to follow in the footsteps of the great devotees, Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta, among whom Mahajans, Swayambhuva Manu is one of them, Kumara Kapilo Manu in the list of Mahajans, great personalities whose example should be followed. One of the examples is Manu. So this, Prabhupada has pointed out in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that everyone is following in the footsteps of some Mahajan. Even the non-devotees, they also have their Mahajan. They're not actually great personalities, but they are taken to be great personalities by non-devotees. Prabhupada gave some examples. For demons, Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa, they are Mahan-Ravana. They are great persons. Even in South India, there are some people who have decided that we think Ravana wasn't such a bad guy. I mean, he didn't do much wrong. He only stole Rama's wife. But that Rama got so upset and he came and smashed his whole kingdom. Actually, Ravana was one of us, South Indian. Rama was a North Indian. We don't like him. So some people, not everyone, but some people in South India, they make a Mahajan out of Ravana. Then for the scientists, Darwin is a Mahajan. He's given them the philosophy of life by which they can say, thus, according to Darwin, it is substantiated that there's no God. So this is very pleasing to another class of demons. And there are so many, for militaristic people, Hitler is a Mahajan, great personality, whose footsteps should be followed. Everyone is following someone else. In modern Britain, we see that people are trying to be individualistic. Be yourself. But they be themselves, but then they find that everyone else is being themselves in the same way. Try and be as different as possible. Make your hair blue. That's pretty different. But then you find so many other hundreds of people have got blue hair also. So, be different. What? Everyone's trying to be individual, but everyone is controlled. Missing understanding. In modern life, everyone is controlled. They like to think not controlled. That we are free, independent. Do what you like. Don't care for anyone. But people are very much controlled by their senses. There's the whole propaganda of modern society. Enjoy your senses. But people are not enjoying. People are so much frustrated. I see in this country, practically more than anywhere, people are so frustrated. Very, very aggressive. Atmosphere. I was thinking as we were in Harinanda in London and someone attacked, and then yesterday in Birmingham also in Harinanda, people walking around very asserting, very assertive and aggressive. I'm very strong and very tough. I was thinking that you see that they have this idea of Stone Age people walking around with clubs. So it's just this kind of mood. Anyone gets in my way and I'll boom. So this desire for material enjoyment is banned. It's already a fire. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, lusty desires. Dushparena analena. Lusty desires, they're already in the heart. And if you exacerbate them, it burns more and more. And it's like a constant fire that's burning. In Krishna consciousness, we're trying to diminish that fire. Lust, or rather, direct that desire towards Krishna. But material happiness is, especially in the modern age, it's defined as how much you can increase your lusty desires. But actually, what's happening, there's a heart disease, with karma roga. We hear so much about heart disease. It's the real heart disease, that your heart is burning. That lusty feeling, which is actually a cause of suffering, people take it as pleasure, isn't it? It's considered if you can increase your lusty desires, that is a cause of pleasure. But actually, it's simply a cause of pain and frustration. Because mostly you spend all your time desiring to fulfill your lusty desires. So that's burning, burning, burning. And then when you do so-called fulfill your lusty desire. By engaging in sex life or lust, another transformation of lust is greed. You want to get some big car to show how much better you are than everyone else. Or whatever it is, so many things are advertising. But when you get the thing, it doesn't satisfy. It's a whole big hoax of material life, which is so much exacerbated in modern society, that by buying this or by doing that, you will be happy. I was seeing yesterday this Persil advert. Now, can you imagine anything as unexciting as Persil? But they're showing that if you use this, and the lady's holding the super white, more white than it could possibly be, except in a photo, cloth, and the look of some kind of, oh, it's so wonderful to hold this cloth on my body because it's been washed in Persil. So then you get the Persil, put it in your washing machine. It's a very boring, mundane thing to wash your cloth. It doesn't fulfill. It's a hoax. That by buying Persil or by doing drinking Coke or whatever it is, drinking some kind of beer, it will fulfill you and satisfy you and make you happy. It's just a great hoax. You're never satisfied. And even if you have some slight feeling of satisfaction, drink a Coke. I never like Coke, actually, by the way, just personal. But you drink it, and you know, some kind of drink, and it goes down and goes in your stomach. But there may be some feeling of satisfaction, but what satisfaction? It's not like in the advert, you suddenly start jumping around in such ecstasy because I drank some Coke. It doesn't happen. So it's a big hoax, and people, there's so much advertisement how you can be so happy by using Persil or going on holiday to Tunisia or whatever it may be, driving a Ford car. This will make you happy, but it doesn't. And so the winding you up more and more, enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. But there is, it's just not there. The enjoyment's not there. Therefore, people more and more and more frustrated. Still, they try to enjoy. You go in there through the center of any city in the evening hours, and especially in this so-called summer, they'll all be out, the young ladies with wearing as little as is considered decent. And the whole atmosphere is one of men and women coming together to enjoy. So there's some enjoyment is there in youth. Very tucham. Yan maituna adigriha vedi sukami tucham. Prahlad Maharaj has analyzed this. Happiness of sex life. It's very insignificant. But even that, as you get older and older, you can't do it. You're physically not able to do it. That's why material life means it's a guaranteed formula to get more and more and more frustrated as you get older. No one's satisfied. No one is. What is satisfaction? They advertise smokers, now you're not supposed to have smoking advertisements. They generally used to advertise smoke. Satisfaction. But as the great Mahajan Mick Jagger said, you can't get no satisfaction. See, even he has so much money and fame, and he's not satisfied. He's still at the age of, how old is he, 55 or something, running around all over the world doing concerts to get more money. He's not getting any satisfaction, and nor is anyone else. Material life means a guaranteed formula to become more and more and more dissatisfied. Therefore, we have to see which Mahajan should we follow. What to speak of happiness? Happiness is defined in terms of some adrenaline increasing activity. But where's the satisfaction? Well, that's not actually happiness, and there's no satisfaction. So Bhagavatam is showing a different kind of Mahajan to follow, completely different. People can't understand. How can you be satisfied? What do you do? Every day we sing the same song. We don't get bored. Same way of life. Even the same class, you see. How many times have you heard this kind of class? Material life is miserable. Chant Hare Krishna. Has anyone ever heard a class like that before? How many times have we heard it? But we'll go on hearing. Because That verse is there. Satang prasangam namavirya samvido bhavanti karna rasayana katha. To discuss topics of Krishna in association of devotees, it's very pleasing to the ears and the heart. Rasayana katha. Rasayana means it's like a tonic. If you're sick, it cures you. And even if you're healthy, it makes you better, stronger. So, Hari katha. This is pleasing, very pleasing. Even again and again you hear. Shingato dhyayato Vishnu. It's described it. Manu, he repeatedly heard about Krishna in dhyayato. He contemplated this. This is an important part of devotional service, that at least as we go on in devotional service, we should try to cultivate this contemplation. In the beginning we're hearing, and it may be new, and we're just trying to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, how it all fits together. It's not very difficult to understand. Simply, we're not this body. We're eternal spirit souls. Krishna is also eternal. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only by serving Him can we be happy. There's no happiness in material life. So basically, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is very simple. And there are details. There's so many detailed points that we have in different Mahajans and what are Krishna's three principal energies, and how Krishna expands into different incarnations and then into the jivas. So there are so many details. The basic philosophy is very simple. So after some time of hearing this, we may think, well, heard it all before. Don't need to go to class anymore. Heard it all before. Boring. So that means, actually, we haven't heard, if we think like that. That means we're in material consciousness. We think, if we think I've heard it all before, therefore I don't need to hear it anymore. That means we're definitely not following in the footsteps of Manu, who spent his life hearing. Of course, there are unlimited topics of Krishna. So much to hear about. Goswamis have written so many books. Even if you wanted to, of course, they're not all translated into English. But even what books we have on Krishna consciousness in English, now as devotees are bringing out so many books, you can't keep up with them, unless that's all you do. But even if you were to sit down now and spend the rest of your life only reading all the Vedic literatures, Vedic and Vaishnava literatures, you wouldn't come to an end. It's not possible. There's so many books. But even, there's so many books, but the essential books are Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can read them again and again and again and hear again and again. And it's not that you come to the end. I've finished reading Srimad Bhagavatam. There's no finishing. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is unlimited. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna. Krishna in literary form. That means you can't come to the end. Just like saying, I already took darshan of Krishna. Like the tourists. They go around and I visited London. And here you see, here's the photograph book. Here's me standing in front of Tower of London. Here's me standing in front of Westminster Abbey. Here's me on Oxford Street with the Hari Nam Party behind. I've seen everything in London. Seen it, done it. That's it. Okay, next year we're going to China. We're going to go somewhere else. And here's a picture of me against the Great Wall. Seen it, done it. That's enough for one life. No. It's not that you take darshan of Krishna once. Okay, that's it. Again and again. Because Krishna's form is ever enchanting, ever pleasing. Devotees aspire to see Krishna, or rather be seen by Krishna. That's a better attitude than taking darshan. The servant comes humbly before the master and requests, what is your order? How may I serve you? So in the same way, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, it's also a matter of worship. It's not just reading a book, This, all other books are perverted reflections of Srimad Bhagavatam. The material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. We find in Srimad Bhagavatam all elements, which in any book there's a message, there's romance, there's suspense. What will happen? Will Bali Maharaj follow his so-called guru, or will he surrender? Will he fulfill his promise? So many factors are there, but it doesn't become boring For someone who's actually studying Srimad Bhagavatam, one who's actually hearing, he takes pleasure in hearing again and again. Because by hearing again and again, swadhu, swadhu, pade, pade, you're tasting at every step the nectar. What is this narration about Krishna? If you consider what are the pastimes, see, dhyayate, what are the pastimes of Krishna? Contemplate, you hear the story. Bali Maharaj surrendering to Vamanadeva. Contemplation. Contemplation means you heard the story. More or less you know the story. What happened? Then you just imagine, what is the situation? Bali Maharaj is there, emperor of the universe. He's taken it by force. All the demons are around him very proudly, performing sacrifices to reinforce his situation. It's a big spectacle, big public affair. So many Brahmins are there chanting. And all of a sudden they see on the horizon, brighter than the sun, some figure coming towards them. The young Brahmachari boy. So Bali Maharaj said, I'm so blessed, such a great personality has come. Now this will be really auspicious. So like this you can contemplate how Vamandev came, Bali Maharaj was promising, Shukracharya was telling him, don't promise too much, don't give too much. See, like a materialistic guru. Sometimes in India we find that young men, some young women also, sometimes they come and start frequenting our temples. So in the beginning, sometimes the parents are happy. That's nice. If he's religious, that's good. It's better than him becoming a drunkard. But then after some time, when they become more interested, then they become afraid. And they'll say, it's all right to be religious, but not too much. Don't go to the Hare Krishna temple, but don't go there too much. So in the same way, Shukracharya, his guru, he's engaging Bali Maharaj in sacrifices. Sacrifice means you have to worship Vishnu. He's Yagyeshwara, Yagyabhut, controller of the sacrifice, the enjoyer of the sacrifice. Shukracharya saw this is Vishnu come, so he said, all right, I'm training you to worship Vishnu, but not too much. Don't give everything to him. If you give everything to him, then, what is that he said? Murha vartishyate ekata. If you give everything to him, where will you live? What will you do? You won't have any place even to sleep. And implicit in that is, me too. What about me? I've helped you to conquer the whole universe and you're just going to give it away just out of sentiment. Come on, be reasonable. Just think what you're doing. So you see, what is the contemplation, all the pastimes of Krishna. You should contemplate them. Hear about Shrinvata, Dhyayata, contemplate. This is good subject matter for the mind. Very purified. Otherwise, our mind is full of garbage. And even if it's not full of garbage, plenty is plenty. See, the whole civilization is dedicated to filling our mind with so much garbage. Everywhere you go, so many advertisements. Just throw it in. Throw in the garbage. Fill your mind with garbage. Make your life garbage. Rubbish style of life. But here, it's described about Manu. He didn't waste any time with any rubbish activities. Rather, he engaged himself fully in hearing, contemplating, writing Prabhupada's written. Although it's not explicitly stated in the Sanskrit, but Prabhupada, with his transcendental vision, seeing these pastimes, has seen that Manu was also writing about Krishna. That's also one kind of kirtan, to write about Vishnu. Shravana, kirtan. Kirtan means glorification. When you've heard, then you can write. So this is important that we should also contemplate. When we hear the class, we study Bhagavatam, try and think about it. It's not just, all right, I'll study for 30 minutes or 1 hour or 1.5 hours, then you close the book. Close the book. Better to keep the mind open. Keep the mind. Try and think about this. What is it? Bali Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj, why are they listed in Bhagavatam? There's so many great devotees. Manu, why are they described? What is it about their pastimes that are so pleasing to Lord Vishnu. What is it about their attitude? Now we're saying there's this word, attitude. You have an attitude problem. You sometimes hear this. So attitude problem means just like Hiranyakashipu, he had an attitude problem. Or Kamsa. But what is the proper attitude then by which Krishna is attracted? Krishna is known as Bhavagrahi. That he accepts, basically he accepts the mood of a devotee. Not so much, you see, you may offer so many things in arati. You may even offer so many nice foods. It's not guaranteed that Krishna is going to accept. He's not an offering machine. What is prasada? Prasada is something you cook, stick in front of the statues, ring a bell, blah, 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 blah. Okay, now it's prasada. Krishna is not an offering machine. He accepts the love and devotion. Patram pushpam phalam tayam yome bhaktya prayachati. Tadaham bhaktya bharata. Krishna says, I accept the devotion. If something is offered to me with devotion, fruit, leaf, flower, ashnami prayatam. I accept if it's offered with devotion. So what is that devotion by which Krishna is not... Krishna has come on the invitation of Prabhupada. Prabhupada has brought him so we can worship him. Then we have to bring the offerings to him. But what is it about Bali Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, that Krishna came to them? What is their attitude? What is their superlative attitude in devotional service? So we can study, contemplate, and try to, also in our own lives, try to act like that. In such a standard that Prahlad Maharaj was never in the slightest bit afraid, even though Indra and all the demigods were afraid of Hiranyakashipu. He wasn't in the slightest bit afraid. Bali Maharaj, a very difficult decision. What to do? Shall I follow my guru? It's only because of his mercy that I came to this position. And everyone is depending on me. I have my duty as a king to maintain all my subjects. They all worked so hard to put me in this situation. It's not by my own endeavor alone that I become king of the whole universe. So wouldn't it be ungrateful to reject Shukracharya and all my followers? Wouldn't it be a dereliction of duty? Yes, that's true. From the material point of view, as a king, he acted most irresponsibly. But then he considered that on the other hand, if even by spoiling my good name, losing my kingdom, being tied up, made into a beggar, then somehow or other, if I can satisfy Lord Vishnu, it's then he decided, yes, I will give everything to Vishnu. Because of that, even at the time, everyone was very upset. All his followers and all very upset with him, chastising him. But in the long term, he's become glorious. He's become remembered as a great devotee. So Manu also is remembered as a great devotee. Even though he was apparently living a material life in great opulence, but he wasn't concerned. He was doing that. But his dhyayatam, he was always thinking about Lord Vishnu, even though he was in the midst of so much material opulence. But he was always thinking of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, as he grew older, he didn't become frustrated, but rather he became more and more and more and more satisfied and blissful. It's like we saw Prabhupada, and although from the external point of view, Prabhupada appeared to be an old man, but no one thought Prabhupada's an old man. He didn't think like that, because young and always young and fresh, because always Krishna conscious, always meditating upon, talking about, writing about, remembering the eternally young and fresh Krishna. He wasn't worn out by the material world. Rather, he pushed back the current of material life by his own overflowing love of Krishna. So actually, as devotees get older, they get younger. It's the time factor doesn't act on a devotee. The sun rising in the morning, you say, oh, how nice. Nice sun today. But actually, it's that sun is cutting away at your lifespan. But for a devotee, it doesn't reduce his life because he's living in a different dimension. He's living in the dimension of Krishna consciousness. Devotee lives in the spiritual world. So there's no question of death for a devotee. People ask that, well, you also have to die. Actually, no, a devotee doesn't die. Not like a materialistic person. A devotee dies to live. He's already living in this world with ding, 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 offering something to Krishna, cooking for Krishna, offering something to Krishna. And devotee, what does he do in the next life? Same thing. That's how Prabhupada described that for a devotee. Death means it's just like going to sleep. And when you wake up, you're in Goloka Vrindavan with Krishna. Whatever you're doing here, chanting, singing, serving, making garlands, same thing you do there. So this way, Manu passed his life and fully in Krishna conscious and prepared to go back to the spiritual world. What are we doing here? Shrimbato, Dhyayato, Vishnu. We're trying to follow in his footsteps. Hearing about Krishna, thinking about Krishna, glorifying Krishna, writing about Krishna. Preparing to follow in the footsteps of Manu and go back to Godhead. It's the back to Godhead movement. We're all meant for going back to Godhead. So we regularly hear about that. What a nice prospect, going back to Godhead. And here, on the other side, what is this material life? It's so miserable. We should hear regularly also, because we have long, long habit of trying to enjoy this material world. And even though it's plain to see it's not enjoyable, a long, bad habit we have of trying to enjoy. But that material enjoyment, that engagement in material enjoyment, that works antithetical to Krishna consciousness. It spoils our Krishna consciousness. There's Krishna and there's Maya. Of course, here we see that Manu, he was in a materially comfortable position, but he was always thinking about Krishna. So we may be materially comfortable, or materially not very comfortable. Generally, we see in this age our devotees materially not very comfortable. Living in the ashram means squashed up. Or trying to make a living means very, very tough for most devotees. Especially they don't have any taste for it. No one has any taste for it, but the kamis, they're trying to cultivate a taste for it for material life. But devotees, it's very painful. What do you think? But a devotee, he always tries to hear about Krishna, contemplate Krishna. In this way, although he's living in the material world, he doesn't take part in the sources of misery, which are sense enjoyment. But he goes on contemplating Krishna, remembering Krishna, hearing about again and again and again. So that finally we become convinced after hearing many, many times, chanting many, many times, we finally become convinced that yes, actually, Krishna really is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not just something that we are imagining. It's the actual fact. And the actual fact is that I am his eternal servant. And the actual fact is that the only happiness is in his service. So let us wholeheartedly do that. Wholeheartedly surrender to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment? Please. What is the difference between Krishna consciousness in the neophyte stage and Krishna consciousness in the advanced or pure stage? It's a difference of level of consciousness. Krishna conscious means to be conscious of Krishna. Right? That's a simple definition of Krishna consciousness, to be conscious of Krishna. So in the neophyte stage, our consciousness of Krishna is just awakening. It's not very developed. The pure devotee, his consciousness is overwhelmed with thoughts of Krishna. In the neophyte stage, we're just trying to think about Krishna. But in the advanced stage, you can't stop thinking about Krishna even if you try. You find the gopis, they were complaining that Krishna, we gave everything to him, And he just mistreats us and runs away from us. And we're always talking about him, but it's simply a cause of pain for us. Okay, from now on, we're making a resolution. No more talking about Krishna. No more thinking about Krishna. Finished. And they find out that we can't do it. We're not capable of not thinking. We're not capable of stopping to think about Krishna. Of course, that so-called pain, that's the highest ecstasy. But for a pure devotee, there's no question of not being Krishna conscious. As for a neophyte devotee, he's always in a very shaky position. Because he's like a pendulum going this way and that between material consciousness and Krishna consciousness. And even his Krishna consciousness is not very developed. What are the stages of development? Well, that's a big book. It's not a short discussion. That Rupa Goswami has summarized, Ado Shraddha Tata Satsanga Tapajana Kriya. So, Anartha Nivritti. Then, the beginning is some initial faith. That something here is quite good. Then, associating with devotees, following the process of devotional service, becoming freed from anarthas, unwanted activities. Tato Nishta, then strong faith, then taste, which is tata. Then becoming attached to Krishna, then ecstasy begins to develop, then pure love of God. So the answer to your question is read Nectar of Devotion and all of Prabhupada's books. Stages, in the neophyte stage, in the advanced stage, practically the activities are the same. Neophyte devotee chants Hare Krishna. Advanced devotee chants Hare Krishna. But it's the development of consciousness. That is the difference. Boring activity, the same, it becomes boring. Well, nothing's boring in Krishna consciousness. So if we are in Krishna consciousness, there's no question of being bored. So that comes to your next point. Inattentiveness. Yes, if you're inattentive, if you're not attentive, if you're not thinking that I'm doing this for Krishna, then it becomes boring. But if we are Krishna conscious, remembering that I'm doing this for Krishna, then everything becomes ecstatic. The gopis, they're also churning the butter every day. It's a pretty routine activity, like a factory job, going like this. But at the same time, they're chanting about Krishna. They don't become bored. So the whole point is to be Krishna conscious. It takes practice. That's why we hear in the morning, we hear about Krishna, and then during the day we're performing activities, we always have to remember that I'm doing this for Krishna. Sweeping the floor, who wants to sweep the floor? But if we think, I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm getting the opportunity to serve Krishna. Millions of lifetimes I was a bug on the floor. Now I'm getting the chance to clean the floor for Krishna. How fortunate I am. Then we don't become bored. Rather it's anandam buddhi vardhanam pratipadam purnam ritasvadam. It's an ever-increasing ocean of bliss in which there's nectar at every step. To the Sankirtan movement. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan.
George, Srila Prabhupada suggests that if one perfects his devotional activities, he goes directly back to the spiritual world. But also,
not only suggests, very emphatically states.
That's what he lays down. Mm-hmm. But I've heard from senior devotees that.
Well, if you heard something from senior devotees, which is different to what Prabhupada said, then who's right? They're not more senior than Prabhupada. Whatever it is, whatever they said. If someone says something which is... Of course, it may be sometimes that something you hear is apparently contradictory, but it's not. So let's, having cut you out, let's hear what you have to say.
Well, that one takes birth where Krishna's only pastimes in the material world to be trained up some more.
Well, that's going back to Godhead, isn't it? Going to Krishna's pastimes.
Are we still suffering there?
No, you're not suffering. And if you're you're taking birth in Vrindavan in the house of a cowherd boy, a cowherd family in service of Krishna, that's suffering? Doesn't sound like suffering to me. That means you've attained the qualification, but you need a little training, what to do. And so it's not a suffering position, that's a liberated position. Yeah, so much suffering. Yeah, it appeared many of Krishna's devotees, Prahlad Maharaj, how Prabhupada suffered so many years struggling to preach and establish this movement. But that suffering is because they're always thinking of Krishna, that's actually not suffering. Jyoto Deko Vaishnava Vibhara Duk Taha Janeho She Parananda Shuk. This is analyzed by Vrindavan Das Thakur and Chaitanya Bhagavat. If you see a Vaishnava and it appears that he's suffering, you should know that it's actually the highest transcendental happiness. Because that suffering, apparent suffering, increases the intensity of this, their feelings for Krishna. This Kunti Devi, she in her prayers, she described how the Pandavas are suffering so much. They suffered so much. Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana Asat Sabhaya Panabasa Kritshrita Mede Mede Neka Maharata Astrato Dronastratas Chasma Hare Vidakshita. She gave a summary of some of the worst things. That first of all, Bhima was poisoned, then the Kauravas tried to burn them to death. Then they had to face man-eating rakshasas in the forest. Then the Asat Sabha, the gambling match in which they were humiliated, everything taken away. And then they were sent to the forest, even though they were great kings. They were used to comfort and honor. And then they just became vanavasins, just like their aborigines and they had to live in the jungle. They had to fight in the battle, so much difficulty. But Kunti Devi said, you protected us at every step. So then she said, well, now there's no danger, all the danger's over. Let's have some more danger. Well, what happened? Now it's all peaceful. So now, see, everything's peaceful. Krishna came for a courtesy visit to see the Pandavas. Now he's going away again. So she said, give us some more trouble. Vipada santu tashashra tatra tatra chagatya. Bhavato darshanam yatsyat apuna bhava darshanam. She said, let there be difficulties. Because if there are difficulties, we'll remember you more. We'll see you more. We'll always be calling out to you. And if we see you, we will not see repeated birth and death. So the suffering of a devotee, that is actually not suffering. That's because that intense remembrance of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna come to experience the ecstasy of Radharani. And what is that ecstasy? What is that highest ecstasy? The feelings of separation from Krishna, which for the residents of Vrindavan, they couldn't imagine anything, any suffering. For them, there's no suffering because Krishna was with them. But then when Krishna left, there's no limit to their suffering. But that suffering is the highest ecstasy. In the material world, the happiness is suffering and the suffering is suffering. But in the spiritual world, happiness is happiness and suffering is also happiness. It's all bliss. How to understand? Not by any material means. Hare Krishna.